the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there being an entrepreneur or dreaming of being an entrepreneur. We are going to help all of you. We're going to keep you motivated to get out there and make the hard decisions and get up early and stay up late and work on the weekends instead of going and golfing or watching that TV show that you wanted. We're going to give you that motivation. If you follow along every day, we'll be here to keep you motivated to find a path that's going to be successful. And on top of that, we're going to give you the tips, the tricks, the techniques to be successful so that you know how to do it correctly. Yeah, that's one of the cool things about entrepreneurship in the last 20 years or so. A set of best practices has emerged. We know the formula now. And here on the show, we certainly talk about that. We take it a step further than most people do, though, especially with the passion. But there is certainly a formula out there. Start small, test, go into it and see if you can find an early sale before you spend $5,000 million and double mortgage the house. You know, all of these rules, the start fast and all of this stuff has become a formula for best practices. And we interview a lot of those people here. We're going to have one coming up here in a few weeks. We have Eric Ries coming up, one of the most famous entrepreneurial thinkers out there. And then you add that on top of AI. And you can do so much these days with so little work and in so little time. If you go into any of the AI and says, here's what I want to do, and it will give you back a formula considering the world's best practices. And so it's just absolutely a great time to be an entrepreneur, and I am excited to be a part of it. And hopefully this show will give you the tips and the interviews that you need to be successful. We're always trying to find great guests of all varieties and introduce them. Our first guest today is Armin Avanesyan. He is talking about his new book, Selling Senses, and is also going to introduce us to his business. A very interesting conversation. We go on for a lot longer than I thought we would because he was so interesting. And we have a quick 10 in there as well. Armin plays the quick 10. And then after that, we have a greatest hits, Faisal Hoak, Wall Street Journal and New York Times bestselling author, is with us to, this is a greatest hits, by the way. We had a server that went down, or the company went out of business after 10 years. And so we had to move everything, and we are slowly getting our greatest hits back by playing them for you, because for you, it's new, right? This is an older interview, but the information is still just as relevant. So anyway, Faisal Hoak is with us in the second part of the show. Thanks for being with us. We'll get started in just a second.
Change? Introducing The Real Environmentalists, the bold new book by Jim Beach. It's not about activists, politicians, or professors. It's about the entrepreneurs, real risk takers, building cleaner, smarter solutions, not for applause, but for profit. The entrepreneurs in the book aren't giving speeches. They're in labs, factories, and offices, cleaning the past and building clean products for the future. The Real Environmentalists is available now because the people saving the planet aren't the ones you think. Go to Amazon and search for Real Environmentalist. Thank you.
We are back. And again, thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to introduce my first guest today. Please welcome Armin Avanesyan to the show. He is an award-winning fintech and payment sales leader with more than 20 years of experience. He has been building his career and is currently working at a company called Ant International. That's a cool name, where he is head of sales and partnerships. He has also just released a new book called Selling Senses, Unlocking the Power of Sensory Sales and Inner Wisdom. Armin, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jim. Fantastic. Thanks for having me on. And listeners, good morning to you all. Excited to be on to share the story.
Tell me about Ant International. Cool name. What does it do? Tell me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're definitely a global organization that's focused on payments. So whether you're a mid-sized business or a well-known brand, our goal is to help you accept payments from customers around the world. And my job there is leading the head of sales and partnerships for Ant International.
Okay, who's the target audience for that? Is it big companies or individual users?
So it would be both mid-market and what we call key accounts. So think about your larger organizations, well-known brands that we're all familiar with.
Okay. And how is Ant different from some of the other competitors out there that move money also?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So our reach is global. And so one of our strengths is being able to provide the businesses that we work with reach to over 50 countries and 300 different payment types that they can accept from their customers from their various different websites. So the biggest strategic advantage that we have is that we allow these businesses to not just expand here in the U.S., but globally. So we are very much a global entity focused on global payments.
Okay. And so this is for a website to collect a global payment then? So for like a service website or a product website, is it for, and it, like, do I put this on my website as the, you know, the builder, the salesperson here? And then now I'm able to collect payments from Spain and France and Germany for my customers, from my customers.
Yes. And you're articulating it correctly, right? So at the end of the day, think of it as you had Jim's, shoe website. Right. And, you know, you're currently focused on selling the shoes on the website in the U.S. and you reach out to us and say, hey, I'm looking to expand in Asia and Europe. And so we will be able to, you know, provide you with the solutions to be able to accept payments in those various countries and their payment method types. So essentially helping you grow your bottom line, your revenue by having a much wider reach than your traditional U.S. focused market.
Okay. How old is the company and how long have you been there?
Wow. So Ant International has quite the history. So I'm sure the listeners may be familiar with the name of Jack Ma, who developed Alibaba and Alipay. And so Ant International is an offshoot from Alibaba. And so we actually, our entity name here in the U.S. is Antom, which stands for Ant to Merchant. But Antom is part of the Ant International organization. So well-known, well-established global leader in the payment space.
Very interesting. Okay. If there's Alipay, why does it need another company that does sort of the same thing? Doesn't Alipay do the similar things?
So think of Alipay as a mobile wallet, just like we would be using Google Pay and Apple Pay here. So with this Alipay solution, though, it gives you global access to multiple different payment method types versus just with Google Pay or Apple Pay, you're just using U.S. cards to make payments. So you have a much wider reach when you're leveraging Alipay. It's, I believe, the largest mobile wallet in the world, actually.
Yes, well, everyone in China has to use it. So.
Or in the APAC.
Yes. All right. Well, great idea. And when you joined the company about a year ago?
Yes, I just actually celebrated my 1-year anniversary at the end of March, actually. So really excited. Yep. Thanks so much.
Your role there?
So I'm currently the head of sales for our offline payments channel. So we're in the midst of actually launching our offline payments channel here in the U.S. So our current strategic focus has predominantly been online merchants. And so in the next quarter or so, we'll be launching our offline solution targeting small businesses in the community. So personal care service providers, auto repair service providers. And so we want to, again, expand our reach and provide more solutions, but again, support the community and the small businesses that we interact with on a daily basis.
And do you go after particular targeted industries? You just mentioned auto repair. That seems like a very targeted industry.
Right. So initially, our core two verticals are going to be in the personal care service provider space. So think about your nail salons and spas, and then auto repair services. And so what we're looking to do is to serve the underserved merchants in our communities with our solution. And so we'll be starting off with our Payments Plus terminal solution. So excited to bring that to the marketplace in the next couple of months here.
And how will you market that? Will you go to every individual car repair shop? What is the marketing plan?
Yeah, so from our perspective, we'll have both a strategic field business development team, as well as grassroots marketing. So whether it's through our website or through different marketing channels, we'll strategically target those core verticals and share our story and essentially work with them to bring our solution to the market.
Yeah, one of the things I love about that is that you can buy a list of every auto repair shop in the United States and then call every one of them. You know, it's a well-defined marketplace.
And not just that, you have the opportunity to join very strategic associations, right? So there's auto repairs, associations, there's car collision associations. So you can have a very targeted approach. And so we're very excited to bring that solution to the market.
How did you choose those two particular niches?
So what we wanted to do, again, is because of our story, right? So Alipay and Antom, we wanted to focus on markets where our story would make the most sense. So underserved merchants that would be predominantly in the Asian American owned business segment. So we're looking to help those merchants to essentially, at the end of the day, grow their business with our solution. And then our competitive advantage being bringing that Alipay Plus solution as another form of payment in addition to our traditional payment method types like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. I like it. Armin, let's change topics. Let's switch to your new book, Selling Senses, Unlocking the Power of Sensory Sales and Inner Wisdom. Very powerful title. I love this idea of sensory sales. Tell me about that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes back to Professor Zaltman from Harvard University. His research found that 95% of purchasing decisions happen in the subconscious mind. And so what Selling Senses is about, bring a holistic approach to how we approach marketing and sales. I think just being in the sales and marketing space for over 25 plus years, what we traditionally experience is a secular perspective or a worldly perspective on how we approach sales and marketing. And so what Selling Senses does is gives you a different point of view. And so that point of view is leveraging not just the secular perspective of sales, but also the spiritual perspective of sales. So the book is broken up into thirds. The first third essentially delves into the basics of sales and more specifically around consultative selling. The middle book starts to focus on engaging the five senses that we're all accustomed to, whether it's taste or feeling or smelling or seeing. It's essentially understanding how powerful the senses are and knowing that as human beings that we've been created to experience things in multiple arenas. So when we think about it, we have two eyes, we got two ears, two nostrils, right? two lips that comprise it, and two hands. So we were created to experience things as part of that sales process and just life in general. And then the back half of the book introduces a concept, again, that's very familiar in the sales space. It's, spiritual intuition and spiritual intelligence. And so it's a perspective of it's okay to bring your faith. It's okay to bring your spiritual self to your work to bring the best version of yourself. And so in the book, I introduce something called the sensory alignment pyramid. And I think, Jim, you've heard of, IQ and EQ before, right? We're all familiar with that. Yeah. But rarely do we ever touch on SQ, spiritual intelligence. And so to drive a more holistic, balanced approach to give your customers and prospect clients the best experience possible, a memorable experience, at the top of the pyramid sits SQ, spiritual intelligence. And in the bottom corners of the pyramid sits IQ and EQ. And for you to drive the best outcomes, I believe all of those key components need to play in the arena that we operate in.
What were on the other corners, EQ and IQ?
Right. So it's our natural intelligence, right? The intelligence quotient. And then you have emotional intelligence. And then at the top of the pyramid is spiritual intelligence.
All right. So spiritual intelligence, knowing how religious what is it? So when we talk about emotional intelligence, it's about knowing ourselves and knowing how we impact others through our actions and things like that. Does that relate to spiritual intelligence? So how well I know my own spiritual nature and how my spiritual life impacts other people?
Exactly. And it's basically making focus on ensuring that you're working on your spiritual being as and spiritual self as much as you're working on your intelligent self and emotional intelligent self, right? And so whether, again, for me, being of the Christian faith, it would be, you know, having those elements of whether it's prayer or a devotional or scripture to start the day, right? So it's ensuring that you're embedding that and that you have your integrity, your morals, all of those key components as part of your core self, which are the foundations of building trust. And so those then will essentially help develop your emotional intelligence. And so that's why I put SQ at the top of the pyramid, is because that's the starting point. So once you got your why, once you understand your morals and you have that foundation, then you can start to really put yourself in the shoes of someone else or in the buyer's position and start to think about what they're thinking about and bring a more real experience to those individuals that you're working with on a daily basis.
All right. Is this something that I talk about and share with others, or is this an internal journey only?
So, you know, that's something that you would have to choose to do, you know, as the person, right? So for me, it's very much part of my everyday life. So I'll give you the example. So when I wake up, just even this morning, I started the day off with reading, you know, Bible promises, scriptures, and then started off the day with prayer, took a walk without my phone, just to center myself and to be prepared for the day in and of itself. Now, if in my daily interaction, it's about helping people, right? Putting their best interests at the forefront of what I'm doing, right? Connecting with them on a level that shows that it's beyond the sale, that I care about them as a person, as a human being, right? And whether it's through active listening or engaging them in all of the different senses that are available. And so it's very much interactive, but it's up to you to shape it in your daily sales activities and marketing activities.
Because I don't know, you know, if you were to make a sale religious, I don't know how the people would feel about that. So how do you ever interject this without it being awkward and uncomfortable for people?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I agree with you. So it's not like I'll sit there and you know, quote Bible verses and so forth, but it's implementing those things that you learn into your daily activities, right? Whether it's, you know, whatever Bible promise that you may take with yourself, it's embedding it into your activities. It's not sitting there to share a religious perspective or, you know, try to convert someone during the sales process. It's just making sure that you're maintaining your morals, your ethics, and, you know, your questions are geared towards making sure you're helping the customer and not just about the sale. So it's about driving integrity in the sales process more than it is about, you know, sharing your spiritual perspective in the sales prospect. And I appreciate you actually clarifying that, because I think that's an important thing to clarify. It's bringing your best version of yourself to what you're doing each and every day. And in order to do that, you want to be grounded in some form of spiritual foundation. And so as you feed yourself that spiritual foundation, you go live it in life with purpose.
Armin, I'm glad you came in today so that I could sell you this big widget that I have. I just want you to know that I'm a Christian, and so I am very concerned about honesty and integrity, and I just wanted to let you know that. Not only do I worry about my emotional intelligence, but I also worry about my spiritual intelligence, and I just want you to know that this entire negotiation sales process is going to include my honesty as a Christian. What'd you think of that?
So that framing of it, right, wouldn't be necessarily the framing that I would bring to it. It would be, I'm here in front of you, Jim, today, and I want to make sure that I give you my full attention and that I'm actively listening to your pain points and the concerns that you have around operating your business. And I want to ensure that I recommend the most appropriate solutions and products that are really, truly going to meet your needs and drive value to your bottom line and help you to grow your business. And I'm looking to build a lifelong partnership and relationship with you, not a one-time transaction, but looking to build with you as your business grows.
So you're not going to mention the spiritual piece at all?
No, it's just who you are, right? Okay. At the end of the day.
What if you know they're a Christian?
So for me, at the end of the day, it's about loving everybody. And so that's the core of what Christianity is, right? So embrace and love all, right? Love God and love people,
right?
At the end of the day. And so that's what I'm about, is going out there to serve with purpose, with, you know, God being the foundation of who I am. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm a servant. So I am out there to help people through service. And that service happens to be through financial solutions and products.
Go back to the middle part of the book about senses. And
yes,
the title as well. What senses are we referring to there? Help me with that part.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about the senses, we're talking about sight, sound, taste, feeling, right? It's all the traditional five senses that we are all familiar with. And so, you know, studies have shown the more senses that are engaged in the sales process, the greater the likelihood of increasing your sales. And so there are, guys to the least listeners. So there are studies out there, Jim, that show that brands that engage at least three or more of the customer senses drive significantly higher recall and emotional impact.
Is that why department stores pump smells in?
Yes. And I'm not even kidding you. The hotel that I'm at today.
Yes, the hotel. And you can even buy the scent now. The hotel scent in the store.
Absolutely. And so it's very much important that you have a multi-sensory experience. And that's what the core of the five senses in the middle of the book are, is... And it's, again, Jim, it's not about checking off a checklist and saying to yourself, oh my gosh, in this sale, did I check off all every single five cents? It's just in the sales process, you want to drive as many of the senses as you can to create multi-sensory experiences. And when you think about it, statistics show when you do that, you can increase memory retention by up to 70%. And people don't remember only 10% of what they hear, but up to 80% of what they experience. And then going back to the emotions driving 95% of the purchasing decisions. And so that's what the core of the book also focuses on, is how you, as a marketer or a salesperson, business owner, startup, can engage your customers or prospect clients' senses to drive a more memorable experience that drives that brand recall and drives the sale and drives long-term retention and relationship.
All right. So what does this mean in practicality? You don't really want me to start pumping in a smell into my office, do you?
That would be nice. No, it means that as you have your prospects, your customers in front of you, you want to do your best to create an experience that's memorable and for them interactive and something that helps them to remember you as they go forward to drive repeat transactions and loyalty to your business. And so it's much about creating an environment so that the buyer feels comfortable, engaged, and a part of the decision-making process, but leveraging their senses, their eyes, their ears, their hands, their taste.
Okay. Very interesting. Do the smells connect with the spiritual intelligence in any way? If I smell something, does it bring me back to a memory of being in church or cathedral,
for example? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can give you, like, for example, my own wedding, right? So In some churches, you burn candles, or there's like that, I forgot what they call it. There's that incense thing that burns that lives that aroma of frankincense, I believe it's called. And so very much so, but, you know, in that sense of like that, you can definitely have triggers that can bring that spiritual moment to you. And when you think about some of the scents that you will smell at, let's say, colognes or incense, whatever may be the case, that may very well, you know, trigger that nostalgia or memory.
Very interesting. And what about the other senses, sight, touch, taste? How do they get involved?
Absolutely. So give you a specific example. So as a payments expert, and when you're going out to speak with the small business owner, you're scheduling and you're meeting with them in person, right? So they get to see you. They get to make eye contact with you. They get to hear your tone. They get to see the body language. So that's the sight. That's the sound. And while you're in that meeting, you know, what we traditionally do is we bring our demo devices into those meetings. It's a terminal, for example, and we demonstrate how that terminal can help them grow their business. And you put that terminal in their hands and you allow them to experience the features and the functions for themselves, right? And so very much engaging many of the senses as you are in an in-person meeting with a small business owner, right? And so in that sales process itself, you have a greater likelihood of closing the sale. I think there's a concept called, don't recall it off the top of my head, but once you put something in someone's hands, the greater the likelihood that they are to buy from it, because it starts to create an emotional connection with that product or solution.
Sure, that makes sense. Armin, great stuff. Really learned a lot from you. Thank you so much. How do we find out more, get in touch, follow you online, buy some payment solutions, all that, please?
Absolutely. So for Selling Senses, you can visit www.sellingsenses.com. That's sellingsenses.com. You can definitely grab a copy of the book on your traditional purchasing sites like Amazon and Google and Barnes & Noble. And if it relates to the payment space, you can reach out to me at armin.avanesian@antgroup.com or reach out to me via LinkedIn with my first and last name. But Jim, before we go, I wanted to know if you're open for the quick 10.
Always, always. Yes. I'm required by state law to ask, are you currently sober?
Absolutely.
You are sober.
Yes.
Do you want to accept the standard wager?
What is the standard wager, Jim?
The bet that everyone else made.
I will take that bet.
All right. Number one, your favorite creativity hack.
Oh, I mentioned this earlier. It's silence with movement. So take a walk, no phones, no distractions. Focus on the mind, focus on yourself, focus on the heart. Spend some time with yourself.
Number two, favorite bootstrapping trick.
You have to be pre-selling before you're building your business. That's what I'm learning now with the books. You got to pre-sell before you build.
Number three, name your top passions.
All right. For sure, building. I love to build things from the ground up. Sales psychology, for sure, as you can see from the book. Human connection, because of who I am at the core. Personal growth, because we never stop learning. And the great outdoors, go experience all of creation with all of our senses.
Number four, the first three steps in starting a business are?
Number one, I would say, is make sure that there's demand. So validate demand. Sell your product before you try to perfect it. And solve one problem and be good at solving that one problem.
Number five, the best way to get your first real customer is?
Direct outreach is the best way to get your very first client.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
Man, if we can come up with some kind of AI that enhances your intuition but not replaces it, I think that would be worth for me.
Number seven, best entrepreneurial advice?
I've learned this in all of my journeys. Speed wins, whether it's speed to market or speed to solution, speed wins. But perfection can kill momentum, so don't get too focused on perfection.
Number eight, worst entrepreneurial mistake?
build something nobody asked for at the end of the day.
Number nine, favorite entrepreneur and why?
Favorite entrepreneur and why? I would have to say Steve Jobs. I think I would have to say him, obsessed with experience.
Number 10, favorite superhero?
It's going to be, people are probably going to question me on this. I'm going to say Batman because he didn't have any superpowers, really. He just was really disciplined, focused on strategy and relentless execution.
Excellent answers. While we calculate your score, tell us your URLs one more time.
It's www.sellingsenses.com, or you can reach me about payments at armin.avanessian@antgroup.com.
All right. I'm calculating. Oh, Armin, I am so upset for you. You got a 94, which is an excellent score, but you have to have a 95 to win the wager. So unfortunately, you owe us a Tesla. We always play for a Tesla. So I'll look forward to that soon.
I'm contacting Elon Musk as we speak, Jim.
Excellent, excellent. No white. I've already got some white ones. So send me a non-white Tesla, please.
You got it, Jim. You got it.
And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day today and using today to make yourself a better person. Someone more likely to go out there and solve the problems of the world. I am very excited to introduce you to my next guest. He is someone doing just that, trying to solve the problems of the world. He left Bangladesh at 17, but has had one of the careers that you just read about. He was with General Electric and went out on his own and has been writing for Fast Company, Huffington Post, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, a whole bunch of fantastic places. He's just published a new book called Everything Connects. And if you go online, you will see that not only is it selling well, but some of the people who gave him quotes, blurbs, recommendations about the book were unbelievable, including Nobel Peace Prize winner, the man who started Grameen Bank. Just unbelievable accolades. He is also running three companies, and we will find out about those. I'm very excited to introduce Faisal Hawk to the show. Faisal, welcome. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, I'm very excited to learn about all that you're doing. You're a busy man.
I am indeed a busy man. Yes, I'm trying to do a lot of different things.
All right. Well, let's start off with the most important thing, your new book. It was just published by McGraw-Hill, my publisher as well. Everything Connects. What is the thesis of this book, Faisal?
Well, you know, when you want to do something, first you have to kind of know yourself, in the sense that you have to find what is it that you want to do and what satisfies you. And once you figure that out, then you can figure out what is it that you want to do for others and how to motivate and recruit other people for your ideas. And once you have yourself and few people that supports you, then you can go into creating whatever that is that you want to create. That creation could be a financial gain. A creation could be that you want to change the world, whatever the case may be. Unless you know and connect with yourself and connect with other people, you cannot certainly connect with your creation and the creation that actually creates value. So that's basically the thesis of the book.
Okay. Is this have anything to do with, say, emotional intelligence or anything like that?
A great deal because, if you really talk about how do you get to, find your calling or find your passion, you have to, very much get in tune with your soul and your mind. And, you know, we use this term mindfulness, which has been around 300-400 over 1,000 years in many ways. And so we use this notion of being very much aware of your thought process and your emotions and mindfulness. And that's that we drive that concept all the way how you create a new innovation. So mindfulness and emotional intelligence, relentless devotion to your craft, those are underlining throughout the book.
Okay. Well, I certainly believe in all of those. So that's easy to do. I 100% agree. What do you mean by the phrase that we are now living in the age of creativity, innovation, and sustainability?
Well, I mean, if you look at what's going on to today's world, I mean, we have much better access to technology than ever. So and that's driving a huge portion of innovation. Even most disadvantaged locations now have access to a cell phone, as an example. And then that allows us to be more creative in the sense how we come up with ideas by collaborating with others and how we, take those ideas and distribute those ideas. All that changing a different kind of social behavior that we never had before. So, and when we can bring that together, that allows us to be have a hope to be more sustainable, personally, professionally, and as a result, socially.
Is innovation and creativity changing?
Yes, it's definitely changing. I mean, take a very simple, mundane example. Like, you mentioned very early on in the interview that I originally come from Bangladesh. I mean, farmers now use mobile devices to understand the weather pattern, which they were not able to do even 5-10 years ago. And as a result, now they can figure out how to deal with their farming activities and where to take that product they're creating, meaning the crops they're creating, and where to distribute and get a better price and whatnot. So those are not very sophisticated application or uses, meaning you're not launching a new rocket ship or you're not controlling some drone from your cell phone. You're talking about very basic human functionality. So I get excited about those basic human functionality, and that's what I mean by creativity. And that creative activities can be nurtured by a farmer, an artist, an author, an entrepreneur, or somebody who's sitting in MIT Media Lab and trying to come up with next generation technology.
All right. I know that in the book you talk about how the roles of a group are changing, and you come up with four types of personality, I guess, four different roles that are in a proper organization. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. You almost have to understand how people work today, right? So the best and brightest people necessarily does not work inside one organization anymore. We are forced to collaborate with many different type of people around the globe. So if you look at it from that point of view, we almost have to think about how to get better organized so that we can take advantage of the motivation, the intrinsic motivation that drives people's activity towards creation and innovation. So from that point of view, you can almost look at I love movies. I'm sure most of your audience love movies. And if you look at movie creation, or if you look at music, when people create a band or you come up with a symphony, many different people play different roles based on the movie and the role and what they're trying to accomplish in the part of that movie. So from that point of view, what we've done is that we looked at, when you talk about creation and innovation, you're talking about somebody who comes up with idea, somebody who then takes that idea and try to build that idea, somebody who takes a product or something that you have created, tries to take that out in the market, and then somebody tries to expand the footprint of the market. So if you start looking at from those kind of roles, and we use those four roles as a skeleton structure, you can expand it many different ways. You can start looking into people's expertise and apply those people different ways in different projects versus the traditional role of you're a finance guy, you're a marketing guy, you're a graphics person, and you are a software developer, and that's your role for the rest of your life. That doesn't really allow us to extract the best talent each of us, possess within us and contribute to creating a new and different things.
All right, that's really powerful, because I've always thought of myself as a marketing guy or one of those phrases, and you're saying we need to redo that and rethink it all together.
Absolutely, because, get your own career, right? So you're a marketing guy, wrote a book, and now you're running a radio show, teach entrepreneurs how to become better entrepreneurs, right? So look at all the different things you already done, yet you're saying you're a marketing person, right? So that it's actually limiting thought process to put a label around somebody. Obviously, we need to focus, and that's where the mindfulness comes in, which we talk about to accomplish one task at a time. But that one task at a time does not define who we are and what we can accomplish in our lifetime. And we're constantly transitioning from one stage to another stage, and that applies in life as well as in business.
All right. How can I now, and how can the entrepreneurs listening take this information and use it to our benefit?
I would say that, this is very fundamental in the sense that you have to really cultivate your desire and your passion and what is it that you want to do. And even though you want to do many different things, you have to kind of have a focused thought process. What is it that you want to do that particular moment and time? And take that moment and time, goals and aspiration, and then manifest that into a product or service that creates value for yourself or whatever value you want to generate for others by recruiting what I call the right traveling partners that can help you to execute what you want to do. So in a very high level, these three part approach, meaning figuring out, how you connect with yourself and then figuring out how to connect with other people at an emotional level so that you can motivate and inspire them, because the entrepreneur's job, first and foremost, aside from knowing what they want to do, is really inspire other people. And the third is that, once you get that, your traveling partner and your calling, then create the ideas and the platform and the value that you want to put on that to take it out of the market. So these three parts, and is what we try to outline in the book so that anybody can take advantage of it.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. I love that. And I love the three-step process. It just makes it a lot easier for us. Let me ask you this. Can you give us a big, big business example of where this philosophy has been true? Can we see this at any of the Fortune 500 companies and look at an example?
I would say that, I have seen bits and pieces of this throughout my career, small and large corporations, as well as, some of the public sector organizations that some of my companies have served. But the key is that whether you're small or large, this is really a individualistic way of manifesting your organization. And you mentioned emotional intelligence right up front in the beginning. Emotional intelligence starts with a person who then becomes a leader, and the leader's reflection becomes the culture of an organization. And I can't pinpoint one example that says, okay, here's GE or here's Pepsi or here's Northrop Grumman that practice this through and through. And my argument or theory or whatever you want to call it, that unless and until we do that, we're not going to create long-term value. And you can see that example when you look at, you know, when companies comes to an end. I mean, you know, I've gone through that myself, but I've also seen that in large organizations where if you look at Dow's listing today, or on original Dow listing, the companies that were there, most, you know, aside from GE, no one is there. So that means it all came to an end. Right? So unless and until we take a holistic look about how we look at ourselves and how we want to translate that into our organization and culture to create value, you know, it's really put us at a disadvantage.
Can you talk to us about what you see the difference is between qualitative and quantitative?
Sure. So, I mean, you know, so the qualitative is, you know, you can look at it from a financial point of view. You can look at it from an impact point of view, right? So as a society, we have been very much ingrained with this idea of, you know, what is the output of the next quarter and what is the output of the next quarter? So what happens is that even though we may meet numbers or we make a sales goal or we sell a particular unit of product or service that you want to sell, you know, that's a very much of a short-term view. That's what you mean by quantitative outlook. The qualitative outlook is that when you say, look, if we came up with this product or service, this is going to have this type of human impact on a long-term basis, and we're going to do the right thing so that it does have the ability to make an impact. So when you look at that long view of quality, you know, your impact, not just social impact, but your financial impact also increases a great deal, and you constantly are able to reinvent yourself with that kind of value system versus, hey, I'm going to create a company, you know, talking from an entrepreneurial point of view, I want to create a company, I'm going to run it for a couple of years, and then I'm going to exit out of it, and then whatever happens to that company, whatever happens to that company. Right, so we've seen those kind of bubble-centric mentality during dot-com, and we've seen this in 08 and 09 in the financial industry, and I'm sure that was not the only, you know, we'll see it again. But when you look at those kind of short-term impacts, forget about value creation, actually you do more harm than doing any good for society in general.
That's true. That makes a lot of sense. Can you talk to us about Leonardo da Vinci and how he embodies all of this in your mind?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, da Vinci was a Renaissance man, and he was a lot of different things. Just like we talked about, that he didn't have one role. He had many roles, and he has a lot of different passions. Painter, he was a sculptor, you know, he created sculpture, he was an engineer, he also was an entrepreneur because for each of his projects, he had to actually go get funding and feed economic, you know, model that would allow him to create what he wanted to create. But he was also, you know, but if you really analyze how he looked at things and how he created things, he was very in tune with himself and the nature and how he observed things. I mean, he used to walk around near the beach, and he would analyze a shell, look at how the shells are, crafted. And then he will take those learning and apply to the things that he was creating. So as an example, I mean, you know, in his blueprints or in his diary, you know, he had all these diagrams and hand sketches that we all know about. You know, he would look at light. When he would observe light, he would not look at how the light works, but rather our eyes works to translate that light, you know, from an image translation point of view. Right. So it's a very different way of looking at it. It's a way of being in tune. What is it that you're looking at, but also what is happening around you? It's this awareness inside and outside that allowed him to be such a prolific, person with everything that he did.
Right. Well, it's certainly, I love that. I love that analogy too. It makes it really clear to me. I think that's the best way to understand it, simply because of all the variety and the things that he was doing. We are about to run out of time, unbelievably, and we haven't talked about your businesses yet. I'd love to learn about them. Tell me about Shidoka.
So my company Shidoka is a venture company. I'm incubating and creating new ventures. So we just started this about 6-8 months ago, and we already have 2-3 portfolio companies. One of them is a company that focuses on providing a software platform that focuses on education and learning and research data collection. We just rolled this out to the third largest Indian tribe called Chokta Tribe. Over 10,000 people are using this platform to learn the program that will actually help them to improve their lifestyle from education, healthcare, et cetera, point of view. I've got another company called B2B Foresight, which is focused on providing a platform to analyze entrepreneurial opportunities and how do you manage those entrepreneurial opportunities from a long-term value creation point of view. So it has an analytical and a learning component to it that allows you to kind of analyze potential of the opportunity or ideas that you're evaluating. So these are some of the things that I'm working on. So I moved away from your classic large enterprise software business that I was for many, many years. And because I'm an entrepreneur and I love the education aspect of life, I'm more and more being focused on those kind of areas.
Well, it makes sense, and it certainly seems to fit in overall with what you're doing. So it makes a lot of sense altogether. What's in your future now? What are you going to be doing next?
Well, as a venture, my role is to create new companies. So I'm going to look into create newer companies and work with other entrepreneurs and other investor pools. But also, I've developed writing as a passion. So obviously, there are more books in the future. So I'll be doing what I do. I look at this stage as a next stage or next phase of my life. As I said in the book and during this conversation, we are constantly transforming and reinventing. And a lot of us talk about reinvention and transformation of others and companies. I have come to believe that reinvention process starts with yourself. You can't reinvent a industry or a company or is area that you focus on unless until you reinvent yourself. So I think I'll be keep reinventing myself as I go through all this.
I love it. All right. Well, we are now officially out of time. How can people follow you, circle you, get in touch with you, and buy your book?
Well, the book is available everywhere. Get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or 800C or Read or anywhere. As far as finding me, you can go to my website, FaisalHawk.com, or you can find me on Twitter, which is Faisal_Hawk, or just Google my name. It should show up. So it's easy to find me and easy to connect with.
Well, that's because everything is connected.
That's exactly right.
That was stupid. Anyway, Faisal, thank you so much for being with us today. Best of success with the book. Hope it sells tremendously. And I hope you'll come back soon when you publish again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us, everyone. Tell your friends, send your neighbors, make your kids listen. Have a great day and go be an entrepreneur. Go make $1 million. Bye now.